We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, how we doing?
Trades.
Yeah, we are talking trades today. Obviously, we still have plenty of offseason previews and stuff like that to do, but we know that you guys want some trade talk. We got some trade talk from you. We're going to touch on that and plenty more. But as always, you can find the Buzz on all streaming platforms. Jack, where do we start?
Let's start with the Dinwiddie signing trades, Nick, because we've got a couple of those. And we'll start with yours truly. You know, one that I put out because I was just a bit bored and there's no Nets basketball, so I had to relate something to the Brooklyn Nets. And I put out there, Dinwiddie for Patrick Beverley in a sign and trade. Now, taking... Nick, just go, because I don't even think I believe this anymore after watching last night's game. This was after like the first quarter, mind you.
Yeah, I mean, you had obviously the thing with Patrick Beverley last night and pushing Chris Paul in the back and obviously all of his antics. And some might say that's what the Nets need. So I wouldn't like completely rule it out as like a terrible trade. But also, like, I'm still under the impression where I like don't really want to help the Clippers or Lakers, like, just because I think they're going to be a team that the Nets are going to face. And like, they have no other avenue to sign Spencer Dinwiddie. And like, the Nets getting Patrick Beverley doesn't really do that much for them. Then they'd be playing two undersized guards in a closing lineup. He'd kind of just be like a backup. So I'm not necessarily a huge fan of Pat Bev. I always felt like he was kind of overhyped for his antics, and his offensive game is kind of inconsistent. And we've seen him get benched in the postseason. Like, he was benched during different points of this postseason. So I'm not a huge fan of it. No offense, Jack. I love you, though.
No, look, again, just putting things out there into the ether. I think that I get what you're sort of saying, not making the Clippers or Lakers better, but would you prefer Dinwiddie go to Dallas for, you know, in free agency, or would you prefer the Nets to get an asset in return and make a contending team stronger?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really tough decision. Obviously, you always kind of want to worry about yourself. I'm just not sure I'm that interested in Patrick Beverley joining the Nets in general. You know, I would maybe consider another offer of a different player. You know, maybe that's something to look at, but Pat Bev doesn't really do it for me. And I think in terms of what the Clippers are getting and how much better it would make them and what Pat Bev is doing it for the Nets, and where he'd probably be a bench player and wouldn't necessarily play in every single postseason game, I'm not sure. Maybe if the Clippers wanted to throw a pick on there, that's something I would look at.
Yeah, it's the behavior that Patrick Beverley does
that
display
too
overshadows when he does play decent basketball, decent defense and stuff. You know, his antics can be, you know, extra with a capital E. And we also did see, you know, him show some of those antics against Jeff Green this season. Yeah. So he has left a sour taste in my mouth. But it was just, I knew that we had the trade show coming up, Nick, and I thought I'd get involved in the fun and kick us off with a little bit of one. But we've got some other ones that haven't necessarily, we'll stick on the Spencer Dinwiddie route. And this is Billy Reinhardt, who knows the trade machine more than anyone else on Nets Twitter. Let's put it that way. This is
I think it's his homepage.
Yeah, pretty much. The Nets receive Marc Gasol and Robert Covington. The Trailblazers get Kuz, Shamet, a second rounder, and a first rounder. And the Lakers get Spencer Dinwiddie. Nick, thoughts?
You know, I think this is an interesting one. I'm not sure, you know, how good Marc Gasol will be next year. Like, I'm kind of under the impression that he might even take another decline after we saw this season. And Robert Covington is an interesting player. Like, I'm part of me thinks like, oh, he's going to bounce back and have a better year because obviously he wasn't as good as advertised all year in Portland. He did have a couple stretches, but he would give the Nets that other versatile defender. But I think the thing with Covington you look at is he's a better off-ball defender than on-ball defender. So he doesn't really give you that like Kevin Durant relief. Like, sure, he can guard those guys, but he's not necessarily doing an amazing job. So for me, I'm not sure like how much I love this trade. I mean, obviously, trading away Spencer Dinwiddie and a sign and trade is not the end of the world to get other players, but including Landry Shamet, a second round pick isn't really anything crazy. So I feel like I'm okay with this trade. I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's something I would consider. What are you thinking, Jack?
Look, I don't mind it, to be honest, Nick. I'm still somewhat high on Marcus. I'm not really high on Marc Gasol, but I think that how he was utilized in Lakeland this year wasn't necessarily to the best of his abilities. For some reason, they played a worse player in Andre Drummond over him. I think Gasol is a decent option to have when you are going up against the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah. He's been proven to be an Embiid stopper. Now, is he stopping him still to the ability that he was two or three seasons ago? Probably not, but I still think as an option to have, he'd be better than DJ. And if you've got, you know, Marc Gasol and Clax on the same team, and maybe you add some other, you know, vet minimum dude, and you keep Blake around, I like that center rotation. So, and on the Robert Covington route, you know, we probably spoke about him 40 million times in last year's trade and free agency proposals. Yep. In terms of what he could provide the Nets. And look, I'm not going to say that he is, you know, a seamless fit, because like you alluded to, doesn't necessarily give you rim protection in a way that, you know, a Clax or a Jared Allen or those, or Miles Turner sort of does, but he does give you defensive prowess. And yep. The Nets, while they were pretty solid and if not above average in the postseason in their defense, adding a good defender, a guy who's a three-point shot, and also is on a very, very friendly contract at the same time. I think just adding anything to your rotation, because the Nets looked somewhat shallow going forward. Yep. And I think that that's something where you are a superstar-heavy team. You know, you look at the Miami Heat, you look at the Golden State Warriors, you look at the Brooklyn Nets. You know, you need to have guys out there that you can sort of somewhat rely on. And Robert Covington, I think that, look, there could be games and maybe matchups where he might get played off the floor because maybe it is against the Lakers or maybe it is against the Sixers. I don't know, but I'm still pretty confident in him and being able to produce in, you know, key matchups come the postseason. So I actually don't mind this. And I know that some people have been talking about, I talked about it a little bit at the Pacific Post-Up Pod on the Tropical Trades segment, which I really, really enjoyed yesterday, that the other sign and trade that probably would just be a straight one-for-one is Kyle Kuzma for Spencer Dinwiddie. Now, if that were the case, Nick, which would you prefer?
Jack, I just want to talk about this trade a little bit more because you sure. convinced me a little bit more on it, because I think Covington's body type is something that that's really lacked in that series, just having enough forward. So that'd be something to consider. And I think you could probably, you know, hope his three-point shooting with him would improve on the Nets. I'm not sure if the Blazers would do this trade, though, unless they're like trying to get off of Covington or really like Kuzma or really like Shamet, because they just traded two first for him. So I feel like they'd want to sit on the contract a little bit more and see what they're doing. This,
I think
this
it's about Lillard at the end of the day, whatever happened. Yeah.
If they trade Lillard, then yeah, this trade makes a lot more sense for them. So obviously in the Lakers getting Spencer Dinwiddie, they're going to do this trade because that'd be a huge boost for them. So like, I don't think this would be my first option for the Nets, but definitely something to consider. And like you said, the whole Marc Gasol thing is what I'm not sure if he can have an impact. He's going to be 37 years old, but he could, you know, be rejuvenated with the Nets in a different role. Like you mentioned, all that offensive firepower gives the Nets another good screener, which I think is important. Somebody who can run some of those sets that Blake Griffin does. And Covington, I think, could have a bounce back year. So, you know, maybe I'm more towards the liking it, but not loving it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the sign and trade proposals, this is probably the best that you can get. Unless, yep. You know, Reggie Jackson decides that he wants to come to Clipperland or something, and we get, you know, the version of Reggie Jackson we saw in these playoffs or whatever. But in terms of the proposal, and just one more thing about Marc Gasol as well, I think that he obviously can be a bit of a reluctant scorer slash shooter, but he still has that propensity, and he also is a very willing passer. Yep. So when the offense when the offense does get a little bit sticky, you know, dribble handoffs, you know, high post action, you know, low post action. I think that he is just an incredibly smart basketballer, and I think would fit seamlessly in Mike D'Antoni and Steve Nash's offense, as well as I think defensively as well. I think his leadership there, his veteran presence, you know, if the Nets were to somehow lose Jeff Green, you've got another vet there. I think that that's what you want to sort of solidify the nature of that locker room, having some good, you know, intelligent dudes around the way who have, you know, won championships and had success. So, you know, I'm a fan. Maybe I am drinking a little bit too much of the Kool-Aid, but, you know, it's only water in this bottle right now, at least. So maybe I'll have to spruik it up a little bit as we go through this pod. But the Kuzma side of it, Nick, it's probably one that gets touted a little bit. We did hear, and again, Nick Boylan and Lewis talked about this on Tropical Trades, as well as the Pacific Post Ups pod with yours truly guesting on it, about Kyle Kuzma not being long for LA. LeBron isn't a big fan. Could Kuz make his way back to where he belongs in Brooklyn? Because of that, we all know the history of Kyle Kuzma and Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, looking at it, just like a casual fan would be like, oh, Kuzma sucks. But I mean, Kuzma can provide some things for the Nets. Obviously, another body type that gives you that true forward. Obviously, can score the basketball, has improved defensively. His real issue is just like those knucklehead plays. Like, you're just guaranteed to see a couple from him. And obviously, every player has that. So I think if you're trading for Kuzma, you don't want to necessarily depend on him to be like one of your closing five or somebody you're going to play, you know, 40 minutes. Like, he could play in the postseason, but he's not going to play a big chunk of minutes. He could also probably get a little bit better also being around some of the greatest scorers in the NBA. So I think I would be open to the idea. Like, I don't love Kyle Kuzma because I think there's some things about his games. There's a reason that LeBron probably doesn't want to play with him. Like, if he is traded, that tells you something. And Spencer Dinwiddie would drastically help that team as well.
I said this on the pod with the Aussie lads that I think that just LeBron doesn't like young dudes a lot of the time. You know, the history of his career shows that unless you're Kyrie Irving, one of the best scorers and point guards we've ever seen. But in terms of, you sort of talked a little bit about, you know, playing alongside, you know, three of the best offensive superstars in the game. I also do think that just looking at the Kevin Durant side of things, Kevin Durant loves bucket getters. You know, we saw his all-star roster, straight buckets. Kyle Kuzma can do that a little bit. And I think that under not necessarily the tutelage or mentorship, you know, because I think he's got some offensive skills, I think he'd get a little bit more freedom in Brooklyn. And I think that Kyle Kuzma and KD and Kai have talked about, if you replace, you know, Kyle Kuzma with Mike James in bucket getting abilities, you know, it's obviously a massive upgrade. And, you know, they were happy for him to get his own on a couple of occasions. So I think that he would probably improve as an offensive player. And the defensive improvement that we've seen from him has been pretty important. Now, again, Kyle Kuzma isn't a dude I'm in love with, you know, not necessarily the biggest fan of his sort of, like, you know, Tyler Hero-esque sort of fame whore BS that he sort of loves. But I also do think that Brooklyn is a market that probably would suit him well. You know, he's under the spotlights, Barclays, you've seen all the celebrities on the sideline, Jay-Z's there, Beyonce's there, all the baseball players from the Mets and Yankees. So I think that it makes some sense. But you were alluding to before, Nick, in terms of, you know, the making, you know, a contender better. We sort of talked a little bit about the Clippers with Pat Bev, and now we're talking about Kuzma with the Lakers. If you had the choice, which one would you go for out of these two? And who needs, I guess, Spencer Dinwiddie more or less?
I'd rather have Kyle Kuzma over Pat Bev, but I'd rather the Clippers get Spencer Dinwiddie than the Lakers. I just feel like giving LeBron another weapon just kind of alleviates some of his load, and it would just be really, really good for them. And I think, like, getting back to Kuzma, shot 36% from three this year on over five attempts, which is pretty nice. Obviously, career 33% three-point shooter, but he could definitely improve in that area in Brooklyn system. Like you said, that offensive flow, and you alluded to the Mike James thing. Like, if they had him in the postseason this year, that would have actually been somewhat important. Like you said, another bucket getter, somebody who can create themselves. Not to say that he's an elite player, but he's not a bad player. And he's also an okay rebounder, you know, averages about 5.5 rebounds for his career, which isn't bad, which isn't amazing, but he's also has some decent size and length. You know what I mean? He is 6'10", weighs 220. So I wouldn't hate Kuzma. So maybe I like that trade a little bit more than I thought. It's just the scary part about is giving the Lakers Spencer Dinwiddie, playing at home, playing with two elite players. I mean, an AD Spencer Dinwiddie pick and roll is pretty dynamic. So that's like a little, you know, nervous on that end. But also at the end of the day, like as a GM, you typically just have to worry about yourself.
Yeah. And there's no, you know, LeBron's 37, AD has his injury issues, all these different things here and there. I think Spencer would personally fit better in Lakerland. I just think that you can tell that he loves playing against the Lakers. We've seen that before in his history as a Brooklyn Net. I also think that there could be a level of frustration from LeBron from him because he can be either an overly happy three-point shooter or an overly reluctant three-point shooter. There doesn't seem to be a happy medium with Spencer and his three-point shooting. In the past couple of seasons, at least, he hasn't necessarily found that perfect medium. And I don't think he is an amazing three-point shooter in saying that either. And, you know, we know what suits LeBron the most is, you know, generally just decent three-point shooting. And, you know, I think Spencer Dinwiddie would kill it off, you know, secondary actions and running second units and such. And you're essentially getting a better version of Dennis Schroeder. Like, you get your $200 million elsewhere, my dude. You can get that in, I don't know, Barcelona if you want, or the Beijing Dragons, you know, when you're not wearing your Kyrie Irving shoes anymore. But yeah, in saying that, I think that Spencer, we know, we've talked about it before, he wants to go home, which is Los Angeles, where he wants to get the bag. The final one I've got from at underscore Fred83, his sign and trade, Nick, is to Dallas for Dorian Finney-Smith. Now, DFS is on a pretty small contract. I'm not totally sure of the salary cap ramifications for both sides of this. That's where I go to you.
Yeah, looking at Dallas, it looks like they're going to have some cap space, so they could take the extra money in a sign and trade, so that would work. I'm not sure if they'd want to trade Dorian Finney-Smith. And also, I'm not sure if they have the necessity to do a sign and trade if they do have cap space. You know, obviously it depends on how they manage some of their other contracts, or maybe there's another signing they want to do or something along those lines, so it could get a little bit more complicated. But I just don't feel like trading Dorian Finney-Smith, he's a pretty big part of their team, one of the guys who really hasn't underperformed, and he's kind of had a good fit there, he's played some good defense, improved as a three-point shooter. You know, obviously he can be a little inconsistent at times, so I'm just not sure if Dallas would be super interested.
I understand where you're coming from, but I'll go from the other side of things and sort of go, what's going wrong in Dallas right now? A lot. And you could maybe capitalize on the inexperience of their new head of basketball operations, GM, whatever the hell you want to call him, and Nico Harrison. You know, maybe he's throwing a few Nikes into the deal, and maybe he gets happy about that. And obviously, it's Mark Hugh making the decision at the end of the day. Yeah. And if you know, I think Sean Marks, if he wants to stroke his ego a little bit, maybe he goes on Shark Tank for a guest appearance or whatever. I just think that I like this, obviously. Just doing
things. Yeah, I love it. It's a good trade.
It's essentially, you know, you look at Robert Covington on a better value deal, gives the Nets more wiggle room in terms of who else they can add to their roster as well. Works absolutely amazingly. And Spencer Dinwiddie on the Dallas Mavericks, for me, is probably the best basketball fit out there. I just think that you look at what you have him and Jalen Brunson, you've got some good backup guards, and I think Dinwiddie is just a more reliable, upgraded version of what Jalen Brunson currently is. And him sort of running along secondary actions and just being a secondary playmaker alongside Luka, running the second unit so Luka can get a little bit of rest here and there. Pick and roll with Kristaps Porzingis, pick and pop with Kristaps Porzingis, I think it'd be pretty nice as well. Dinwiddie is a great passer, a great lob passer as well. So I think Dallas would be an ideal situation for Dinwiddie. I think you could get some decent cash there too. So look, I think the Nets might be able to get a little bit sneaky. We've seen Sean Marks, you know, make a few steals in his day. We saw it with Bruce Brown in Detroit, and we've seen it in many other occasions as well. So I wouldn't rule it out, Nick. I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. I think it would be more likely if Dallas needed to make the trade. Like, you know what I mean? If they didn't have the cap space, it would kind of force their hand to do something. But if they do have the cap space, I'm not sure, you know, there's any point in them making a trade unless, like I said, they have something else lined up there.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get to now some of the ones where everyone was jumping up on my mentions. And thank you to everyone who...
Do we have one more sign and trade? Thad Young, right?
Oh, yeah, Thad Young. My bad. There are so many trades here, guys. So I am sorry if I am losing myself a little bit in the...
We appreciate all the trades.
the trade source is absolutely crazy. Now, I'm not sure... This is via @SwampDragonStan, Joe on Twitter. He screenshotted this. It might have been from The Athletic. It might have been somewhere else. It might have been ESPN. But it's a three-way sign and trade sort of action happening here. The Bulls get Spencer Dinwiddie. He heads back to his former team. The Brooklyn Nets get Thad Young and a 2026 OKC second rounder. That's protected 31-55. So essentially, it's nothing.
Fake. Yeah.
And OKC get DJ and DeAndre Jordan and a 2021 Brooklyn first, which is our number 27 pick. Nick, this one is music to my ears.
Yeah, I mean, you love the idea of getting Thaddeus Young. I think he'd be a great fit on this team, can provide that grit. You know, three-point shooting has been a little bit inconsistent, but gives you a little bit of an inside score, something the Nets don't really have, somebody who's willing to kind of bang a little bit too. So I love that aspect, and obviously, you know, it's a fake second-round pick, so nothing else there. You do get off DeAndre Jordan by giving up the 2021 Brooklyn first. I'd also look at this trade without including DeAndre Jordan the first, like just doing this trade straight up. If Joe Tsai doesn't care about money, then it doesn't, there's no point in getting OKC involved. If you know, you're trying to save on the tax bill, you include DeAndre Jordan.
I think it's almost like NBA rules now that you have to give a first round to OKC in every single trade for until now, until the end of time, until Sam Presti at least retires from OKC. But yeah, Thad Young, Nick, we spoke about, I think, around the trade deadline last year about, you know, his potential as a returning Brooklyn Net would just be perfection. He literally gives you everything you need. Small ball, five abilities. Creates his own shot a little bit. You know, he's good around that sort of mid-range. Nice little sort of floater game. You know, he's hit the three ball a little bit more later on into his career. You know, playing alongside, you know, you're getting an upgraded Jeff Green, sort of like a middling version of, you know, he just does so much for this Brooklyn Nets team in terms of playing that for that five position, as well as just secondary actions. Really, really incredibly smart, knows his role. Zach LaVine loves him. So that's why, to me, I see it unlikely happening. If the Bulls, you know, aim is to sign Zach LaVine long term, you keep the guys that Zach LaVine loves alongside of him. I know that I've heard that many a times from the Chicago Bulls about how much of a fan Zach LaVine is of Thaddeus Young. But then again, at the same time, I heard that with Karl Anthony Towns and Robert Covington. And Robert Covington was obviously shipped out as well. So, you know, the new front office there is still in its infancy. So we could see something happen. And obviously, there have been changes being made. You know, does Thad Young fit alongside Nikola Vucevic? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not 100% sure. Time will tell that.
But and then worried about what you're going to do with Markkanen because he's a restricted free agent as well.
A lot of moving pieces there in Chicago, and maybe Sean Marks could capitalize on that.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something to look at too. I think also you look at it, if you're Chicago, you know, who's going to impact winning more, Spencer Dinwiddie or Thaddeus Young? And I think getting a true, you know, starting NBA point guard, Spencer could fill that role, and that might be the difference for them. And obviously he can play at a fringe all-star level. So that's where I think the intrigue is for Chicago. We already talked about Thad Young. He'd be a great fit. Maybe you need to, you know, spice it up a little and add a second round pick for Chicago. You know, that might get it done too. So, I mean, it's on the table. I would look at this as a possibility, like, because I just think, you know, Chicago's front office probably wants to make a move. They have some pressure now, given they trade all those first for Vucevic.
Yeah, they've been semi all in. You know, they've certainly got a few chips left, so to speak. And I think that they would have to move maybe a Satoransky or a Kobe White. Maybe they don't see either of those guys as part of their future. And you know, I'm a big Sato fan ever since. my guy Nick Busick has been all in on the Sato train in Washington. So, you know, I think Satoransky could be, maybe the Nets could get him as well as a backup guard to sort of fit into their plans as well. But
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
The final sign and trade, Nick, you sort of told me the salary cap ramifications of it. I'll put it out to you because Jake at JakeRobert32 has been on our fan show, was warm to the idea of DeMar DeRozan heading to Brooklyn. And he said this, sign and trade for DeMar DeRozan, barring they can make enough room to keep the guys they want under the hard cap. DeRozan gives the Nets a third elite mid-range scorer and a fourth elite ISO scorer. His footwork is Kobe-esque, similar to Kyrie. He grew up alongside James Harden, was drafted the same year as him and Blake, played on Team USA with members of the Big Three, could look to acquire him so the Nets can have unprecedented firepower, fits in with the fraternity and culture being built, offensive league, and DeRozan pushes the needle even further. Nick, is there any way this can happen? Because, dear Lord, that would be a fun, fun team if we could get DD.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think it's possible. The Nets would have to jump through hoops and get under the hard cap, and I don't think with what they'd have to do is get off a lot of salary, that salary being DeAndre Jordan and Joe Harris. So I think I'd rather have Joe Harris on his team than DeMar DeRozan probably. I think DeMar's best days of basketball.
That's the thing. Like, I think a lot of people
I think DeMar DeRozan's three-point shooting is really bad, and like you want spacing. Even when Joe Harris is missing, he's still probably getting more respect at the three-point line than DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, but two is better than none. Look, I'm neither here nor there. I understand Joe, and I know that we talked about the slander before. You know, he's not as bad as what he showed in the postseason, and he's probably not as good as being the best 3-point shooter. He's not Stephen Curry, and he's not Klay Thompson. He's somewhere, you know, in the middle, elite enough. But I think just we spoke about Kevin Durant before, you know, bucket getting and such. I think DeMar DeRozan is almost the perfect player outside of his 3-point shooting offensively. And, you know, he played like small ball four for the San Antonio Spurs as well. So I think that the development of his game, I honestly think that he'll get, you know, some sort of payday elsewhere. But I'm super intrigued by the fit just because of his ability to create his own shot. And I think that is the most important skill in the NBA, bar none. We've seen that in the postseason, that if you can't get a bucket, unless you've got four other guys that can, you know, not many teams are going to have the capabilities to play PJ Tucker, Torrey Craig and such out there on the floor. You have to be elite defensively if that is the case. And DeMar, I think he's improved defensively as well. He's passing under Greg Popovich, and the tutelage of San Antonio has been immense as well. His playmaking has been great. You know, you could play him, you know, as a sort of six-man sort of role as well. So, look, I'm a fan of this, but the likelihood of it, as you alluded to, Nick, I see as being pretty low.
Yeah, it's probably under 1% here, unless it's more likely DeMar DeRozan signs a vet minimum contract with the Nets or, like, some crazy thing like that. I think, you know, in, like, it makes sense to a degree, but I still think also, like, he wouldn't get the same amount of volume. He's always kind of had that type of volume, which has kind of made his efficiency a little bit better. And then you have DeMar DeRozan taking fadeaway mid-range jumpers when Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie on your team. I just can't say, like, I truly love his game next to those guys. And I think defensively, he's solid, but he's still not going to be a guy that, like, locks anybody up. So I'm honestly not huge on DeMar on the Nets in general.
DeMar, Nick says Deno. that wasn't my best pun that I've made on this podcast. Let's put it that way. All right, now
a joke right there, Jack. Something you want to tell me?
You know, I've been listening to a lot of the Dunker Spot with Steve Jones and Nikias Duncan, so maybe I'm just trying to do my own Steve Jones impression. Now we can get to some of my mentions and some of the proposals. We got Max Bray at BrayMax17. He says this: our pick this year, the agreement is before, but officially goes through after Dinwiddie or Joe plus DJ and potentially Clax. So you've got Dinwiddie, Joe, DJ, maybe Clax for Jeremy Grant. That might have to be a three-way trade, but I just give outside the big three to get Grant regular season. Can be good on big three rest days. Playoffs can guard wings, relieve Durant of that pressure, and has proven to make threes in the playoffs. Kevin Durant loves him as well, Nick. You know, he was caught. I think he's the reason why Jeremy Grant is on Team USA.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy Grant would be a great fit on the Nets. I don't really see Detroit moving him for this deal, moving him in general. I think he also wants to be in Detroit. So the Nets don't really care about money. His contract still maybe be a slight overpay, but I think he kind of earned it last year. He stepped his game up, and he'd obviously be an ideal role player. He'd be like a star role player in that role. So, yeah, it would be amazing. I'm just not sure Detroit is really interested in moving him, especially for that package. And also, I don't think Dinwiddie would have any interest in going back to Detroit.
Yeah, I don't think he's the biggest fan of that organization. So, yep. But yeah, look, Joe Harris's money almost aligns with it. So if you maybe do Joe and DJ a first, maybe a future first, all Clax or whatever. I just think that Jeremy, out of like, we talked about Covington, we talked about Kuzma, we talked about Grant. Out of those three, Nick, is Jeremy Grant the most ideal fit for the Brooklyn Nets?
Yeah, I'd probably say he's probably two tiers higher than those guys. You know what I mean? You mentioned, you know, creating your own shot. He showcased that he can do that this year. And he's also has some good size. You know, he can literally play small ball five, and he would give you another option, give you a little bit more toughness and kind of prove it a little bit more. And he's had some big games in the postseason for Denver, you know, a year and a half ago. So I think, you know, Jeremy Grant would be ideal. I just, like I said, I'd have a hard time seeing Detroit moving him. The Nets would probably have to do a slight overpay, and that's where you kind of maybe get yourself in trouble. And also you just don't have really any picks at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the Kevin Durant seal of approval is always something that, you know, you look behind the scenes, you know, who runs the front office now. A lot of it is the superstar players in alignment with Sean Marks and LeBron James with Rob Pelinka and such. So I think that sneakily this might happen. Sneakily it might not, because maybe Troy Weaver isn't necessarily like, oh man, I don't want to get swindled by Sean Marks again. You know, he already took Bruce Brown and turned him into this weird small ball five thing. Made me look silly, and you know, the player that we got in return is playing in Europe or Russia somewhere right now. So look, there's a history there, and I think that you look to teams that you have a history of trading with. You know, it's the Pacers, it's the Pistons, it's, you know, somewhat the Sixers occasionally, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime in the future. So look, crazy things have happened, but this would be a pretty great fit for the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, I also think including DeAndre Jordan would make it almost impossible to an extent. Like, that would kind of increase what you need to give them, because it's a bad contract and everyone knows it. You know, you're not going to swindle anybody with that, because people saw him play last year.
Yeah, but Troy Weaver loves those centers, Nick. He loves them. So
yeah, maybe DeAndre can only play center, so.
Yeah, play DeAndre and Plumlee together, and maybe you do some sort of like Denver stuff where you get Bol Bol at the three. I don't know what they would do. Isaiah Stewart might you play at the three or something. I don't know. But in all honesty, yeah, there's this. It's unlikely to happen, but I do like the creativity of it. I like where people's minds are going.
I think if there's a third team involved, maybe you could figure something out to try to spice it up for Detroit and give them something that's more enticing to them. And also, obviously, it would hurt the soul to trade Nick Claxton. So that's, you know, that's something tough to think about. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it, but it's just, it's definitely like, do you want to give up your last young piece that could grow moving forward and kind of be maybe your safety net? But at the end of the day, you have these superstars, you want to go all in. So I think you probably do end up moving him in the right trade, but you got to make sure it's the right trade, because that's your last chip.
Yeah, I'd have to get some sort of side hustle and side Patreon going on for Clack City, a Clack City Patreon, because I can't not sing that song anymore, Nick. You know, it's just, it's in my DNA. Ultimately, it'd be sad to see Clacks go, but ultimately, you know, you're all in for a chip, and that's it at the end of the day. You don't really see a lot of rookies contributing or young dudes contributing on championship-winning teams unless they have, you know, pretty high potential, which Clacks does have. So we'll see what happens next season for him. Nick, we've got a couple here from Chandler Harper of the Assistant to the GM podcast at the OTG Network. He's got a couple. We'll go one at a time here. And I forgot that he had about a million sign and trades with Spencer Dinwiddie, so forgive me for going back to some of them. But we'll start off with this one. DJ, 21 and 28 first-rounders for Larry Nance Jr.
Yeah, I think he means 2021 and 2028 first. In case anyone was confused by that. I mean, shit, sign me up for that. Like, it's one pick to get off DJ and one pick to get Larry Nance. Larry Nance would be close to an ideal fit on this team. You know, I can't think of many more players in terms of realistically trading for that I want on the Nets. Just his contract is great. He provides a lot of defense, drastically improved as a three-point shooter, smart basketball player, willing to be that guy that just makes all those extra plays. And I think he's, you know, capable of closing in a closing five.
When we spoke about, we fell in love with him when it was brought up. I can't remember if it was the Glue Guys or Matt Brooks or whatever. When we were doing,
I love him when I watched him play amazing against the Nets when he was part of the reason their big three didn't pop.
Yeah, he is just an incredibly versatile defender, probably one of the more underrated players in that respect because he's playing in Cleveland right now. He's also responded to me on Twitter, Nick, you know, when I put out the Jared Allen tweet about, you know, take care of him, Cleveland. Larry Nance was like, don't worry, we got you. And I'm like, okay, well, we've got a foundation there. We can get Larry Nance on the buzz as well going forward. So I'm an even bigger fan of this beyond the basketball fit. But like you alluded to, Nick, the basketball fit is seamless. He would be just provide so much. And I think also, can you imagine some James Harden, Larry Nance pick and rolls? Yep. Oh my God, the lobs will go for days and days and days. And I've already seen Larry Nance dunk on a Brooklyn Nets player before. It'd be nice to see him do it in a Brooklyn Nets uniform.
Yeah, no, really, that would be some major pop right there. Also, you know, I think he's a solid passer coming off the short roll in that situation as well. He'd check a lot of marks for the Nets. And if you lost Jeff Green, this would be a really nice guy to fill in that role.
Do you, how light, if you're ranking on a likelihood scale of 1 to 10, Nick, how likely could this happen? Obviously, this is probably one of our favorite ones that it's been brought up so far.
Specifically, this trade or the Nets acquiring Larry Nance?
Let's just go with Nance because I think we've got Nance fever.
I guess I'd go with a 5. You know, I can't say it's super likely. I can't say it's not going to happen. I think this would be somebody Sean Marks consider targeting. You know, you look at them probably having to give Jared Allen a big contract, but also they could be trading Kevin Love. So then maybe they don't really care. And now that's opening up space. So I feel like you have to entice Cleveland in some way. I think Landry Shamet would be somebody who's included in a trade like this. Maybe you remove one of the first. Maybe it's a first Landry Shamet and DeAndre Jordan, because I think Shamet would check a shooting role for them, you know, again, next to some of those guards, give them a little bit more spacing, which was an issue for them last season. So that'd be something to look at. But also, I know Cleveland loves Larry Nance. I know Cleveland loves Larry Nance loves Cleveland too. His dad played there. So I'm not sure how interested they are in making that trade. Again, though, he's not necessarily on the timeline of some of the other young guys. So I'd have to put it somewhere like at a 5. What about you, Jack?
I think it's somewhat less likely just because of all the things you alluded to, Nick. It just, everything sways in Cleveland's favor. And the contract that he is on, you know, it's essentially him and Robert Covington on two of the most value deals in the NBA. You know, guys that are under $20 million. I think Larry Nance is something like $12 million.
Yeah, he is 11 this year. He's 10.6 next year. Well, technically, this upcoming season, he's 10.6. And the following season, he's 9.6. So that's a major steal.
That's the biggest steal probably going around for a guy that you know can contribute in the postseason sort of action. And I think that's what, you know, the superstar heavy teams need. You need your bargain basement dudes hanging around there. And you know, whether it's Bruce Brown, Larry Nance, Robert Covington, these sort of guys, you need at least one of them to contribute. And it's not just the vet minimum guys. It's just the sort of filler dudes there. And Joe Harris wasn't that, but you know, Larry Nance would be immense for this team. Nick, we'll go back to Chandler and a couple of other proposals that he had. A Dinwiddie and a 2021 first in a sign and trade for Marcus Smart or Malcolm Brogdon. Dear Lord, we were talking about Pat Beverly earlier. Marcus Smart or Malcolm Brogdon. We've got to get Kay Wall on to discuss some of these Pacers trades. But what are your thoughts on that? And is there any likelihood that this could or will happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure the Nets would have to include a first for a Spencer Dinwiddie Marcus Smart trade. I mean, that's just my opinion. Maybe some type of seconds or something, but it's not a crazy high first, so maybe it's something that would happen. I'm not sure Boston would do it. I think they want to really keep Marcus Smart, but at the same time, they could really want to move on. Yeah, I was going to say, at the same time, they could really want to move on from him. I feel like it's a love-hate type relationship. He would be a great fit on the Nets because he'd give them some of that grittiness. I think his role would be a little bit better because he'd have less offensive responsibility, and hopefully he would accept that role and kind of play his game instead of kind of taking over in moments when he's not supposed to, which kind of happened in Boston a decent amount. So it's kind of like a love-hate thing with Smart, but he also gives you a versatile defender. You know, I don't think he's the same defender he once was, but definitely gives you the versatility, the grit, and somebody who is just like an annoyance. You know what I mean? He's just going to like create that extra dynamic for your defense.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, he's him and Kyrie Irving you know, the love that he's shown for him, you know, and when the narrative was swaying way too crazily to Kyrie Irving's a cancer, all this BS, we saw Marcus Smart on a national platform on The Jump sort of come out and sort of say, and he was cut off a little bit from speaking even more glowingly about him. So I think that it would be a pretty decent fit. I'd have to probably go back through the timeline and delete a couple of tweets here and there. But basketball-wise, I prefer this to Pat Beverly. I think Marcus Smart, he's a better player. I think a better culture fit as well. I think that, you know, he's a ride or die dude. And, you know, I think that the Nets, you know, you get a bit of toughness there as well in him. But, Nick, what about Malcolm Brogdon? Malcolm Brogdon is a all-star caliber player. I'm sure the Milwaukee Bucks are missing him more than anyone else right now. Malcolm Brogdon would just be a super steady fit for the Brooklyn Nets, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a great replacement for Spencer Dinwiddie. You know, I think they're around the same level of player. I think their games are a little bit different, obviously. I think Brogdon probably is more comfortable playing in the complementary role that we saw him play in Milwaukee. I think in Indiana at times he's had too much. Probably led to a little bit of injury, a little bit of fatigue. So on the Nets, it'd be great. I mean, I could see it happen. You know what I mean? I think obviously the Pacers would have to sign Dinwiddie to a pretty large contract for it to match for the Nets, because Brogdon is making 20.7 and 21.7 this upcoming season. So that's something that makes it a little bit more difficult. Maybe the Nets send another player out instead of sending just Dinwiddie. So that could be something to consider as well. But I think Brogdon in terms of a fit would be really nice too.
Yeah, I mean, if you could replace maybe Joe Harris in a 2021 first or some
maybe
sort of
even
first
Landry Shamet and send the Pacers back their own second from this year would be something. I think Shamet could give them, you know, some more spacing on the floor as well. And obviously you link up Dinwiddie and LeVert, got that, you know, classic duo right there.
Yeah, I think we'd have to get some pinstripe Pacers jerseys in some respect, probably, because those are fire. And if you got two of our favorite dudes on the podcast, and if Spencer, you know, the invitation is still open, my guy, even if you're not a Brooklyn Net going forward, you know, bring the tequila, my guy. I've had it ready for ages, man. It's starting to go a bit moldy in the cupboard right now. But we'll move on to another.
Well, Jack, I have a question for you. Obviously, we're going to probably do a Pacers-Nets crossover with Corey at some point, but do you think it's more likely the Nets are doing a sign and trade with Spencer Dinwiddie for Miles Turner?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that a little bit, the Joe Harris Miles Turner trade. I think that the more I look into it, the more I'm like, man, Miles Turner is like elite at some things and then horrible at others. It's just like you're essentially replacing, you know, his field goal percentage for a center is not good. Like, he's just not a good finisher, and maybe in a different situation and with different shot profile, maybe it does improve. But, you know, centers are supposed to be getting 55%. I think he's like under 50% from the field this season.
He does take a good chunk of threes. I would say probably almost half of his shot probably diet is threes, if I had to guess.
And look, maybe that does change the Brooklyn, but I think we would want that to be a similar sort of respect as a Brooklyn Net. But I would be open to it, Nick. I think that Miles Turner, we've spoken about many a times, we'll probably continue to speak about, you know, what Miles Turner could provide the Brooklyn Nets in terms of his rim protection, in terms of, he's also not a good rebounder. Like, he makes, like, Claxton's a better rebounder than him. I think that Claxton has improved out of sight. And maybe Miles Turner in our situation, where you're forcing him to be like, okay, we need you to rebound. Rebound, shoot threes, and you sort of solidify his offensive capabilities. You know, we want you to get some offensive boards here and there. Use your athleticism. There's just he's a non-traditional center. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Well, yes, he provides the rim protection, and he's a really good sort of, you know, drop defender as well. But he provides a non-traditional skill set for a big guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a love-hate player. You know what I mean? I think he's a guy that Nets fans would get frustrated with for that a reason. Like, look, like, he averaged 3.4 blocks this season, which is incredibly difficult to do. And he also played good defense. He's not really a block chaser. So, like, the fact that he can do that but still not be an offensive threat inside just is really confusing. Usually people with that type of, you know, ability can kind of unlock a little bit more offensively, especially based off of what we've seen from him, you know, early in his career. It felt like he was going to be an all-star. It felt like he was going to be a guy that takes major strides, and he just kind of maybe lacks some of that it factor. But like you said, maybe a different role in the Nets could open things up more. I think I'd probably be more open to the idea of a Spencer Dinwiddie sign and trade than the Joe Harris one. I think it's like tough with the Joe Harris Miles Turner thing, because I think talking to Corey and knowing like how Pacers Twitter is with Turner, feels like he could be a guy that really pisses you off at different points, but then also you really love at different points, which kind of was Joe Harris's case during the postseason.
The Nets fans need a whipping boy. You know, they can't love everyone. So, you know, at some point in time, you replace Joe Harris with Miles Turner, then you got a new dude to hate on. You know, Torian Prince is no longer there. Quincy Acey, also the previous former hated Nets players, hate to love Nets players. But yeah, I think that it's something that will be explored. It's probably something that is being talked about. And like I alluded to earlier, in terms of the history of teams with trading with each other, you know, you talk about Thaddeus Young, you talk about Caris LeVert, you talk about all these different things here and there. There seems to be a solid enough relationship between the front offices. And I think that increases the likelihood of a trade happening, whether it's Dinwiddie, whether it's Joe, whether it's Miles Turner, whether it's Malcolm Brogdon, whether it's whoever else it might be on that roster. You know, I think that there could be some action happening between the Pacers and the Nets come this offseason.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. And that kind of leads to our next trade, Jack, that with Chandler, and kind of why I don't think it would happen is because of that reason. You know, the Rockets have no interest in trying to help the Nets. It'd be DeAndre Jordan, the 2021 first for Daniel House and Avery Bradley. Like, the Rockets don't want to see the Nets have success because they have the pick swaps moving forward. So it's unlikely that they're really going to try to help them unless they're getting some crazy deal. And I don't think this is a bad deal for either team, but it's not a crazy deal either.
Yeah, it depends on if Raphael Stone values, you know, the assets of the first rounder, because that's essentially what is the crux of this deal. You know, because DJ is almost a negative asset.
How many
Nets
first round picks can you have?
look, at the end of the day, you know, who needs first rounders when you've got championship aspirations at the end of the day? So I think Daniel House is probably would. I think that House and Bradley are inconsistent role players. Obviously, House is a little bit more reliable. We saw what happened to him in the bubble. You know, the controversy of, you know, just the outside off the court antics. But you know, going back to his former teammate James Harden, former coach Mike D'Antoni, maybe that, you know, revitalizes him somewhat. And Avery Bradley, you know, do we get the version of Avery Bradley that was pretty solid for the Los Angeles Lakers? Or do we get the version that was, you know, unseen in Miami? So I think he'd be a decent enough fit. And if you want some guys to throw on Stephen Curry and, you know, just some of the backcourt players that are around there, you know, Avery Bradley is a pretty solid option to have. But I think Bruce Brown's probably an even better option to have, to be honest. But you're just adding to the rotation, adding to that depth that the Nets probably do need, and adding some guys out there that's just like, you know what, let's give Avery Bradley a go. What can he prove to us in this postseason? What can he prove to us in this matchup? So I like the other proposals better, but I'm not closed-minded to it.
Yeah, I don't think you hate this one. It's just kind of like you said, adding role players. I don't think either of these guys are starters or probably not even consistently closing. Just because, like you said, there's inconsistencies in their game. Bradley's good sometimes. His offense is kind of hit or miss. Can't provide you that defense. Daniel House's game is kind of all over the place. So, you know, I think it's something you consider. But also, do you want to pull the trigger on something like this? I think the Nets would be better off trying to trade their 2021 first for a 2022 first or a future first, so they could use it in a trade during the summer.
Yeah, I think that
we then they have more options.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll spend plenty of time looking at the draft and I guess what that first round entails for the Brooklyn Nets and their offseason plenty of times. But Nick, I think we'll get to one more from Chandler and we might have to put a wrap on it because we've got so many more to get to. And I'm not sure if like we want to be Bill Simmons about this and do a 2-hour podcast. I'd rather split it up and give some more trade action, trade episodes for the listeners at home. So this final one gets the Brooklyn Nets, my Aussie brethren, Ben Simmons. Now it's Joe Harris. Did win a sign and trade. You get Landry Shamet returning back to his former home at 2021 and a 2028 first rounder for big bad Benny Boy. What do you think, Nick?
I mean, ideally, the Nets would love to do this trade. I just think the Sixers would hang up the phone. I mean, there's really no reason for them to look at this. I think they're going to get some type of really good young piece from a team if they do trade Ben Simmons. And I don't think this deal does enough. If the Nets maybe had two more first round picks to include, or maybe even just one more first round pick. I think like a lot of people are undervaluing Ben Simmons right now. He's still a very good player. It's just the role in Philadelphia is not getting the most out of him. Obviously, he has his free throw issues too, but I think that's something that you think is is capable of being corrected. So, I mean, if the Sixers got desperate, maybe they look at this, but I think they hang up the phone. I think Ben Simmons would probably fit better in Brooklyn than almost any other spot in the league, just given what would be asked of him.
Yeah, we've got another Ben Simmons trade that we'll discuss in the next episode, but what if I throw in a Nicholas Claxton for you, Nick? How does Clax City sound if you're Daryl Morey?
Yeah, I think it's something you look at, but if you're Daryl Morey and you make this trade, in your head, how do you not think that you're making the Nets an even better super team? You know what I mean? How do you think that, like, this is a position where we were talking about the trading Dinwiddie, the Lakers and Clippers. Well, this is like times 10 of that, because Ben Simmons would make the Nets kind of, I don't want to say unstoppable, but because everything has to play out and you have to get on the court and play those games, but checks the mark for being an elite defender. There's not probably a better on-ball defender in the NBA, especially when it comes to versatility. Obviously a good rebounder as well. Gives them somebody who can attack in transition. And also, I think Ben Simmons was on the Nets, he'd be a big and he'd run pick and roll with James Harden. He'd be catching lobs. He'd be working that short roll. And I think also there wouldn't be as much pressure on him. So if he did have some of these issues where he didn't feel like scoring, it wouldn't really matter. I think Ben Simmons would, like I said, be probably the best fit on the Nets. It's just kind of impossible to see this trade happen before Daryl Morey reasons and also the Nets not having enough assets.
Yeah, I mean, for all the Aussies out there that have seen the 4-20 ad, Ben Simmons is now shooting threes. So we saw that commercial. Check it out on YouTube if you're not sure. But and look, Ben Simmons' new house in LA, you know, I don't know what's happening there. It does have a basketball rink, which I think a lot of fans probably dived on. And he's not going to goddamn the Olympics. And instead, we've got Matisse Thybulle. So maybe we could show it to Matisse Thybulle, because he is an Aussie, despite the fact he only spent 8 years of his life there. But yeah, I think you've highlighted it pretty perfectly, Nick, in terms of the fit of Ben Simmons on the Brooklyn Nets and the lack of pressure, which I think is somewhat of a thing for him. And the reason why he is not going to the 2021 Olympics to play alongside Patty, Joe, Dellavedova, Matisse Thybulle, and so many other great players for my country, which is frustrating to say the least. It would probably make me desire this trade even more, but there's a part of me that just has this irrational hatred for Ben Simmons and the sort of fake Aussiness that I think he has, and this American dude that wants to date the Jenners and the Kardashians and stuff. But as a basketball fit, like you alluded to, Nick, you know, his defensive prowess, he's an incredible passer. The open looks that he would get, you know, to the likes of our big three would be tremendous, as well as the role players. I think that I can't remember if it was in the regular season or the postseason or whatever, or both combined, but there is no better player in terms of the amount of open looks he gets you from driving and kicking out than Ben Simmons. He'd
get a bad defender on him if he was on the Nets. Like, he would not get somebody good.
Yeah, and look, I think that if you're looking to grow as an offensive player, learning from Mike D'Antoni, learning from Steve Nash, learning from Kevin Durant, Amari Stoudemire, all these sort of dudes behind the scenes, if Ben Simmons is going to get offensively better anywhere, it's probably going to be Brooklyn. And I think that, you know, he said that he loves Philly. I think that that's a little bit of window glossing. I don't think he necessarily totally means that. But, you know, I would like also the opportunity to hate Ben Simmons on my own team as well. So maybe for the love, the schadenfreude of it all, the sour grapes of it all, I would also like Ben Simmons to come, because then if he's bad, I can hate even more.
Yeah, I also think he provides the Nets with an asshole, like somebody who's a real just like jerk on the court and like willing to like talk shit and kind of gives you a little bit of feistiness that I don't think is bad. And also, like, this might be just like a hot take, but I think if the Nets were able to acquire Ben Simmons, it extends their championship window, because he can develop into, you know, a superstar level player possibly. I'm not saying that's a guarantee. I just wouldn't rule it out. And now you have, you know, older versions of your big three getting carried a little bit more by this guy. But again, this is all hypothetical as hell, because the Nets are not going to acquire Ben Simmons. If they do, I'll be happily eat my words, but extremely unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, there were people saying that, like, you know, he's a semi-poor man's Giannis. You know, he has MVP caliber potential. There were people saying that, you know, they would rather put Joel Embiid rather than Ben Simmons in trades following last year's postseason. So it's amazing how quickly things can change in the NBA. So to remain some sort of objective mindset about this, you know, Ben Simmons is a top 40-ish player. He's got three All-Stars on his resume. He's also got an All-NBA. You know, he is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. He will be for the rest of his career. So, look, Ben Simmons on the Brooklyn Nets would be an ideal fit. Likelihood, probably 0 out of 10.
Yeah, 100% right there, Jack. But like you said, we'll catch, you know, the rest of these trades. We got a lot more to discuss. You know, this will be dropping on Friday. Probably be dropping something hopefully early next week for you guys with the rest of the trades. Hit you with some more off-season content. But as always, Jack, a pleasure, and big thanks to everybody for listening.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.